Did you know that most vitamin D3 supplements come from sheep's wool? I'm Kat, founder of Ritual. We're making traceability the new standard for the supplement industry. When I was pregnant, I couldn't find a multivitamin I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested, and clean label project certified. Oh, and our vitamin D3? It comes from sustainably harvested lichen from England, not sheep. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome to Everyone Loves Guitar, where we sit down and talk with interesting professional guitar players and other musicians, uncover their life stories, and discover what makes them tick. If you love guitar, music, and the backstory of people's lives, then stick around. You're in the right place. If you're enjoying this show and you'd like to support it, go to everyonelovesguitar.com/support. And for information on advertising, visit everyonelovesguitar.com/advertise. Hey, everybody, this is Craig Garber. Welcome to Everyone Loves Guitar. And I've got a really special guest today because I've been listening to Chad Ross's music, as long as he's been making it, I think, pretty much. Chad is a guitarist, singer, and songwriter most well known for his work with the psychedelic bands Quest for Fire, Comet Control, and Nordic Nomadic. He grew up in Schaumburg, Ontario, in the countryside about an hour north of Toronto, and he first started listening to classic rock and then got into punk rock through skateboarding, got his first electric guitar, and started some punk bands in high school. I've cut off so many things in your bio. Sorry. I mean, doesn't bother you. It's just me. I'm missing a digit. He started a band called Hacksaw in apparently the year 199, which I think is supposed to be 1999. They were a punk hardcore band. They released two records and toured a lot on the East Coast and the punk circuit. Did you do a lot of touring in DC? Cause I know that's pretty big. It's always been a pretty big.
We definitely played in DC a couple times over the years. And it's kind of foggy in my brain now because it was kind of so long ago, but yeah. I'm pretty sure we had like a whole North American tour book that kind of fell through, but that was the time when we did kind of, it was like a basement circuits and parties and just kind of like the punk scene for sure.
Very cool.
Kind of blurry for sure.
Yeah, man. That's 21 years ago. That's justified. Blurry for anybody. After that, he joined the Deadly Snakes. They're a Canadian indie rock band where he played bass and guitar for 5 years. They released two records and toured extensively through Canada and Europe and the States. Next, he started Quest for Fire, and that's how I got turned on to the band. They're a great psychedelic rock band. They were around from 2006 to 2013. They released two excellent records and toured consistently throughout, again, Canada, Europe, and the States. He also started another band, Nordic Nomadic, which is another psychedelic rock band. But is it fair to say a little more stripped down and mellower than Quest for Fire?
I would say I've always looked at that as kind of my solo project. So that was always just like my acoustic, my side gig.
Yeah, sure. You know, that's how I kind of saw it. I'm glad you said that. Nordic Nomadic released two records and they did one long American and Canadian tour supporting another great psychedelic band, Black Mountain. In 2013, after Quest for Fire split, Chad started Comet Control, another psychedelic rock band with maybe more of a hard rock flair and more keyboards than Quest for Fire, with his wife Nicole on bass. Comet Control's released two records and has another one coming out next year, hopefully. That's all mixed and ready to go. That's got to be frustrating, man. You just like, it's like having a baby and you can't let it out of the womb, sort of.
Yeah, we've definitely been sitting on it for, well, it's kind of recently finished, but but it's definitely getting sidetracked because of the whole COVID thing. And
yeah,
trying to find a release date with our label.
That's got to be tough. Sure. Comet Control has toured a lot through Europe, and hopefully they'll. Have you ever toured the States?
No, we haven't.
It's so expensive. I gotta believe, right? Yeah.
For us Canadians to get visas, it's pretty tricky. And you know, we can get to that later, but there's a lot of steps involved in Canadians crossing the border and just booking tours in general for a smaller band like ourselves. Like, we tend to go when there's definitely a good excuse to go or a good reason to go.
Sure. Yeah, I would like to talk about that later. He also has another acoustic record he's shopping for a label for. Chad and his wife, Nicole, live in the country outside of Toronto. Is that like where you grew up, near Schaumburg?
Yeah, pretty close, yeah.
Oh, that's cool. With their new baby and dog, congratulations. Who's easier to take care of, the baby or the dog?
Probably the baby.
Really? Oh, my God. Well, I'll tell you, that is going to change really quick and really severe. Yeah. You'll be wishing that the baby was as easy as the dog. Chad's also a finished carpenter, and he builds recording studio. Man, first of all, thank you so much for all the great music you've put out over the years. Oh. Is never a time where any of your bands, Quest for Fire, Comet Control, or Nordic Nomadic, comes on when I'm in the car, especially, or in the gym, and it just doesn't like totally zen me out. You know, it's just everything. You do a great job. You write great songs, and you're a master, as far as I'm concerned, with creating, you know, beautiful layers of music that really feel good. So thank you very much for doing that.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the kind words.
You're welcome. Your initial interest was classic rock, and then you got into punk for a long time. How did you land on psychedelic for most of your career since then?
It was kind of like, I guess it was a long transition, but when that came along, it just kind of incorporated everything that I had loved. Like, I guess with Quest for Fire, it was nice. We could play kind of slow, heavy jams, but we could also do fast songs, and we could do acoustic songs. So it was kind of everything just being squished together in my brain.
it's a great band.
Oh, thanks.
And then so you just settled on sort of like, I hate to say settled on this genre, but this is where you still find yourself today musically.
I would say so. Yeah. Like, I'm definitely, it's been like a pretty gradual transition from, I guess, from 2006 when we first started Quest for Fire till now. It's been just a long, slow progression. But yeah, like, the records we're making now are still pretty similar, and my acoustic stuff that I'm working on is still pretty close to what Nordic Nomadic was. I don't think it's going to be called that, this new record that I'm working on, but it's definitely in the same vein for sure. And mm-hmm. I reached out to like some other musicians to help me with it. Whereas before with Nordic Nomadic, I was just kind of working on things on my own with another drummer friend and putting everything together.
Was it hard to work with your wife?
No, it was actually amazing. Well, we weren't sure how it was going to go when we first started touring. Like, we were making the records and having a blast, and then touring, it was great. She was amazing on tour. Our first Comet Control tour ever was just like 9 guys jammed in a van. It was like kind of like, you know, weathering the storm way better than most of the guys in the van. So
really, yeah, I think, let me tell you, man, women are actually less complaining than guys. If you could have a baby, I mean, I watch my wife deliver a kid, you know, it's pretty impressive. Exactly. You started, or at one point you were the roadie for Black Mountain. Yeah. And they're another great psychedelic band. How did you wind up as their roadie, and what did you get out of that experience? And was it that experience that ultimately kind of like inspired you to create your own bands?
Not really. That, like, well, first of all, my good friend Matt was the original bass player in Black Mountain. I didn't really know the rest of them too well. I played some acoustic shows with their old band, Jerk with a Bomb. And Matt just called me up one day and was like, "Hey, do you want to come on an American tour with us?" just for fun. You could, like, I could drive and sell t-shirts and stuff. And that I think that turned out to actually be their first tour. And that was like without Jeremy, the keyboard player, like the analog synth wizard guy. And that was super fun. So they, I don't know, I became really good friends with them, and they asked me to do like, it was probably like two or three other tours. Plus I did like a Nordic Nomadic tour with them opening for them.
It
was like
6 weeks. That's cool.
6 week, North American tour. I did a Coldplay tour with them, which was super hilarious. Like, as
what do you mean?
Like, they were opening for Coldplay on like their second tour ever.
Holy crap!
Amphitheaters around North America, and I was like their only tech guy. I'm doing quotes right now, but I really just drank all their beer and.
That must have been a great gig for them, opening for Coldplay.
That was pretty crazy. Yeah. I think it was like their second or third tour ever, which was insane.
How did they get that gig?
I think the guitarist from Coldplay was like into their first record.
Wow.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah.
What did you, so you basically, it was just a good time for you. It really wasn't like career changing.
I think they had at the time, like their label guys were kind of taking turns being the tour manager. And then the only other person they had with them was me, which is super funny. Cause I think I did like a bit of guitar teching, which was really, I think I changed like one string on like an entire month tour or whatever.
Wow.
that's the connection. And then just over the years, we've kind of, you know, we're still really good friends with all those guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You've always been in a band, and most of the time as a leader throughout your career. Did you ever think about working as a sideman or maybe working in a band, but not being the driving force behind things?
I don't know. I guess I kind of dipped into that a bit, with the Deadly Snakes, but like I was always a part of that band, but I wasn't a songwriter at all. It always kind of felt like I was like a sideman in that band, even though they were all super good friends and totally amazing people to travel with. But yeah, like I think I've never really thought more about doing that. I played with Steve McBean for a while
from Black Mountain.
In the Pink Mountaintops. I did that for a bit. But I always felt like those things were just kind of, you know, taking me off the road a bit, because I kind of felt it wasn't necessarily a waste of time because they're super fun. It's always fun to travel with your friends, but it always kind of takes away from, if you're a creative person, it takes away from doing things of your own, you know?
Yes. So basically your drive to be creative and write your own music is why you're the driving force in a band and why you're not really interested in being a sideman.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
that makes sense.
But you know, those tours were also amazing. I have many fond memories of those trips and being involved in mainly other people's projects for sure. But I can't say I would do it now, like at an older age.
Oh yeah, I could totally see that. Yeah. Plus, once you sort of like do your own thing, it's hard to not do your own thing.
Yeah. Exactly.
In any field, I mean, like I've been working for myself for 20 something years. I don't really think I'm employable at this point. You know? Well, I mean, I don't mean that against any negative. It's just, I couldn't do that. It's not, you know.
Yeah. Same with me. I'm like, yeah, I work for myself even as a carpenter, and I can't.
Yeah.
I could never see myself having another working for anyone else ever again.
Yeah. Imagine punching a clock and some guy's telling you how to like put furniture together or a studio together. And you're like, I know this, man, leave me alone.
No, I can't do it.
Yeah. As I said, you do a really great job of creating these rich layers and textures of music with the psychedelic vibe always present. What were some of your challenges early on as far as like defining that sound, and how did you get good at this from a studio standpoint?
I don't know. I actually think the Quest for Fire kind of lucked out with the four of us kind of coming together to jam. All four of us had kind of opposing ideas of what we wanted, but it was all pretty similar. Like Mike Max, the drummer, came from kind of a metal background. He was an amazing band called Cursed from Hamilton, Ontario. So he came from a metal world, and he was kind of, I think he was burnt out a bit by that, like touring a lot and playing that kind of music. Josh, the bass player, kind of, I think he wanted to sound, he wanted Quest to sound more like the Melvins or something.
Okay.
We had all these kind of, we all came together, and it was actually just started jamming for a year before we actually played a show. And I think just doing a lot of jamming together, it all just kind of came together pretty naturally. And in the studio, like, those records were pretty live. So we didn't really do much tweaking with effects and layers. We did pretty minor overdubs, but we used like the space echo a lot and kind of tried to blend everything as naturally as we could.
So most of the effects that you have are like guitar pedals or stuff like that.
Yeah. Like my secret weapon is probably our secret weapon is probably the tape delay.
Okay.
Like the Echoplex and the Roland Space Echo. Those things are like, they come out a lot in the studio for like guitar overdubs and vocals and everything. They're like kind of the secret weapon.
And you're using an original Echoplex?
Andrew, from Quest and Comic Control, he's got an original Echoplex, and I have, he always uses it in the studio, and I have the Roland 201.
Wow. That's cool. That's really cool. So you just kind of like put it together on the fly as is, recorded live.
With the exception of vocals and some guitar overdubs, but everything like the live tracks for sure, as most bands do. But that was like we got pretty lucky. We were, before we did that record, I think it was like a year. We had already been jamming for a year, so we were just super tight and could go into the studio and just knock it off really quick. And I think that the sound came together just super naturally. We didn't force anything. I think we just spent a lot of time together in the jam space, like working it out.
Wow, that's amazing. That's really good. And like I said, the sound, every record, the mixing is always great. It's just clean. It's just really good records. I was curious, what did Quest for Fire, Nordic Nomadic, and Comet Control offer you separately that the other ones didn't provide? Like, was there something specific you got out of or were able to exercise through each one that was different?
I definitely look at them as being, they're all separate things, right? Like, I think with Quest, it was definitely more like really jam based and a lot of like just kind of experimental, and being able to play, it was a lot heavier to me. And then when we started Comic Control, Andrew and I and Nicole kind of decided that things were going to be more streamlined, that it was going to be kind of like a tighter, we were just kind of working on hooks a bit more and kind of shorter songs. We kind of didn't want it to be Quest for Fire. We didn't want it to sound too much like it. So in that regard, it's kind of more of a straight up rock band for the most part. There's not too many like slow jams or droney parts or kind of experimental parts, but, and then with my solo stuff, I guess Nordic Nomadic is just totally fulfilling in a different way. It's because it's all just, it's me at home, just kind of working on acoustic stuff by myself. So, which is kind of my first love for sure. And that's what I've.
Sitting playing with an acoustic.
Yeah, for sure.
It's really interesting because I think that's a hard thing what you've done. All three of these bands really don't sound, I mean, the vocals, that's, you know, but that's it. They're three separate bands, man. They're not, you know, I never listen to one saying, oh, that's just Quest for Fire slowed down or something, or sped up, or, you know, nothing like that. That's pretty hard to do. I think you did a great job.
Yeah, I can definitely tell them apart. And also with the songwriting, I'm kind of like, I have things at home. I'm like, if I've got like a slower, heavier riff, I'm like, oh, that's not really a good Comic Control riff. You know what I mean? They kind of all go in separate spots.
Yeah. Do you still write stuff for like Quest? Or, cause that, is that effectively gone, that band?
Well, fingers crossed. I don't know. We always, we're all such like good friends, and we always joke about like doing another record. I would love to see that happen. I think all of us would, but Josh lives in Vancouver. Andrew lives in Montreal right now. Mike lives in Hamilton. I'm kind of out of the city. So we're just all like spread out. And I don't know. I think we played our last show in 2013, just kind of thinking like, I think we all knew that it might just be a hiatus, but it was, we weren't sure if it was over or not, you know, but there was never any indication that we, you know, that we wouldn't necessarily get back together. We're like all still really close friends and we chat all the time and it would just be fun to try to do something again. But I definitely have riffs that I'm like, oh, this isn't a Comic Control song. This is definitely a Quest. Maybe I'm just like stockpiling.
That's great, man. I'd love to hear something new. That's a fantastic band. Man, what's COVID like up in Canada? Give me like the vibe. What's, you know,
well,
state of affairs in Canada?
I think it's really calm right now. Like we've definitely got it under control up here. I was reading in the news this morning that there's only in Ontario, there's only 80 new cases today, which is pretty impressive. Like Ontario, I think the population in Ontario is like 14 million too.
And there's only 80 cases in
In Ontario. So we've definitely got it under control. It's not like I look to the States and it seems like it's a crazy partisan issue.
Nothing's under control here. Everything's completely out of control here.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Yeah. I'm sorry to hear that. Like I wish that everyone can get a hold of it for sure. But in Canada, like I think it's from the very beginning, it wasn't a partisan issue. So even the Conservative Party and the Liberal Party, everyone, like all four or five parties, were all just kind of in agreement about how to handle it. And I didn't really see, like in our community, like people were wearing masks for probably since the beginning. Like I saw masks and no one's complaining about it. Everyone's just kind of being polite. It's like total typical Canadian stuff. Like,
right. Sorry. You know,
everyone's, you know, you go to the grocery store, you don't see anyone, you don't see any dumbasses for the most part. You just like, everyone's just kind of doing it, you know, and we've been able to open up most of the economy. People are kind of, it's not
like, really?
Yeah, it's not life is normal, but it's still, it feels all right. You know, like I feel better than when it first started for sure.
Now they're not playing, venues aren't open yet, I would imagine.
No. Yeah. No. There's nothing happening like that. There's no, like, I don't think movie theaters are open. Everything in like indoor close quarters isn't happening still.
It's interesting that you talked about the partisan thing, because I think that is really slowing, you know, it becomes an issue of politics of who's right as opposed to let's just fix this thing. And I mean, it's like, imagine in your house, like, you know, if you only focused on who's right, you'd have, nobody would be married long in the 6 months.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's crazy. Like,
you know, I don't, you know.
It's just like, yeah, like kind of cooperating, banding together and making it work. Like even in Ontario right now, like our, the premier of Ontario is like a super conservative right wing dude named Doug Ford. And he's like, he was actually, you know, mandated the mask from the beginning. Everyone just get along kind of thing and leave politics aside. He's kind of an asshole. And I'm not really big upping him at all, but it just seems, you know, it worked, whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whatever policy was in place, it worked. And we're kind of, mind you, like our population up here isn't anywhere like the States, right? Like we only have 38 million people in Canada.
That's it. That's about a tenth.
Yeah, exactly. So,
holy shit. You know, what a beautiful place to live. Yeah. I didn't realize it was that sparsely populated.
Yeah. Yeah. Just spread out all across. All across the southern border there.
Holy crap. That's amazing. That must, wow. But yeah, everything's partisan here, man. I mean, you can't decide on a new ice cream flavor without, like, you know, it's kind of sad. I'm not a political guy and I just watch this and I'm like, I'm just trying to get to the day, man. Please don't make life any more fucking complicated, you know?
Yeah, it's, exactly.
It's just sad. But I'm glad everything's going well, better up there than it is here. Is there been any insight as to when venues will be opened up?
No, I speak with a lot of friends who like kind of make a living with touring or like, or as sound people or work in bars, and there's like really no indication, like at least up here, about when things are going to reopen. I would imagine they're not, like it's still going to be a really slow 2021.
Yeah.
And I feel really bad for people that, you know, that base their whole income on that. It's like, luckily for me, I'm not like, we're not like a full-time touring band, and we don't, you know, we do it once or twice a year, but we don't like pay, I don't necessarily pay the bills with it.
Yeah.
So, you know, and I can do carpentry on the side, but there's a lot of people that are totally screwed right now.
Oh, yeah.
Rethink their career, at least for like the next 2 years. Like there's a lot of touring musicians that, you know, probably have to go back working in the service industry or something, or another job. There's really no indication about when things will get back to normal, but
yeah,
I hope sooner than later for everyone's sake.
Absolutely. Yeah, I do too, man.
Sure. I'd love to see some live shows.
Well, I mean, and too, if you're a musician, that's, if you are a touring musician, not, you know, there's a big emotional part of what you guys do.
Yeah.
Being able to express yourself, that's been cut off too. So,
yeah.
You know, it's got to be. And I'll tell you, down here, I'm in Florida, which is a pretty angry state to begin with, but the anger level is off the charts, man.
Oh, I bet.
I mean, I'm like in the gym just watching, you know, I use this time. I learned a lot during this. Like I've changed certain things in my life because I realize that shit, you know, life is short and you can get fucking COVID or anything else, you know. I've just been a little more grateful. And I was hoping maybe that would happen, but
not
a chance, man. I was out just driving my truck the other day and like people were nuts on the road and in the gym. The kids are, I mean, really angry. So yeah. You know, people are losing their shit for sure.
True. And that's too bad, right? Like it's like you would hope that everyone could just work together and try to see the end, you know, the end of the tunnel for sure.
Well, just be nice. Cause it's a lot of stress. Be nice. That takes away a lot of it, you know?
Yeah.
Thank you for sharing that. You said that you grew up in Schaumburg, which is a rural country town outside of Toronto by an hour. What was your childhood like growing up, Chad?
It was definitely pretty quiet for sure. Like my, I grew up on a horse farm. My parents got together. Like my mom married my stepfather when we were pretty young, mm-hmm. and he was a caretaker on this really beautiful horse farm. So my folks like took care of the property, took care of the horses, cut the grass and stuff like that. So there wasn't too many people around. Like when I was growing up, I had a couple friends scattered around, but it was a pretty rural area of Ontario, but a pretty nice, quiet place to grow up for sure. Nice community.
How did that influence you musically and personally?
I think just because of living on, it was like 120 acres, right? So it was like a huge property. And I think that kind of influenced me as an adult, just being, I lived in the city for 20 years and I found out that the city wasn't really for me.
In Toronto?
Yeah. It's a big stinky city. And I always just felt like a hayseed living in the big city, you know, like, but my family were always like, they're country people who come from like a line of farmers and working class people.
Yeah.
And, you know, like in the Ontario Northland, there's a lot of like beautiful nature that we did camping and, you know, so I spent a lot of time being in nature and being out of like an urban environment for sure. And, my wife and I both still love that stuff to this day. We try to be out of the city as much as possible. That's maybe cool. Only going to like visit friends or see a show. And yeah.
How did you handle living in the city for 20 years? Because that's a like completely different scene.
I don't know. I that's where the work was for me for sure. And that's where the music was. And you know, as a young person, you're definitely drawn towards like the bigger cities and, you know, yeah. As a musician, that's where everything is in Ontario. Like, it's definitely, it's the biggest city in Canada, right? So there's a lot going on there. A lot of bands stop through. There's just, it's just a good like launching pad for artists and musicians and everything.
What, did you always want to be a musician or were you interested in doing something else like with horses or something or outdoorsy?
I don't know. Like I never really pictured, and I never really thought of being a musician could be a career really. So, and to this day, I'm still, maybe it's cause I chose like a really weird style of music to play. It doesn't really pay the bills, but yeah, like I never really thought of it as a career. I never really thought about yeah, doing it for like completely full time is just something that I've always done. It's been a part of my life. And I've always like held jobs. There's times when I've been on tour for like big chunks of the year. There's times when I haven't. So it's just, and I have a trade, right? So it just kind of equals out. It's just consistently a part of my life, but sometimes, yeah.
It's funny. I would have to say probably 15% of everybody that I've interviewed said that I never really thought being a musician could be a career in some capacity, whether they're like in a band or a sideman or a side woman or, you know, an artist. But it's really interesting that so many people didn't think you could do that. And many are, and many are like you, or they have, you know, side hustles and they tour when they want to.
Yeah. Yeah.
What is, and this may be semantics between Canada and here, what is a finished carpenter? What does that mean?
Well, basically, like I started, when I first started doing carpentry, I was like, I kind of just started doing renovations, just kind of grunt work. And then I worked my way up to doing more trim, more doors, more finer things. So less dust, less heavy lifting. So I'm doing like, I kind of worked for a bigger company for a while doing doors and trim and kind of finer woodworking. And then I teamed up with a good friend and we started building recording studios in Toronto. We've done like 3 or 4 now.
That's awesome.
And so it's just kind of taking my skills and transitioning them into something that I like to do. And it's like, you know, semi-related to music. I'm still doing construction,
yeah,
but I'm still able to do something pretty creative with my hands. So that's, and as I get older, I feel like I get a little bit more confident, a little bit better at doing it. And the projects get more interesting. So.
Well, as a musician and as a recording artist, you're in a great position to say, hey, you know, you really don't want that control panel right there. You want to move it over to here, and here's why.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
It's fun. Yeah.
Yeah. Tell me some low points maybe, or dark periods you've had to deal with, and how did you get through them?
I would say like the time that Nicole and I, my wife and I, decided to move out of Toronto. It was you know, it was just time to go. Like you're when you're getting older, like you, a lot of musicians, you know, want to keep the party going for sure. And we definitely didn't.
Yeah.
No, I'm 44 years old now, and I can't. There's a time when you just have to like look back and see like, okay, that period of my life was fun, but now it's time to actually move on. You know, like it's not really sustainable for sure. Like there's a lot of musicians.
Kids.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of musicians that, you know, get off the road and, you know, your ears are ringing and you're sitting alone on your couch and you're like, okay, I'm just going to go to the bar now and keep this party going or whatever. But, yeah, you know, there's a time, you know, you have to reflect on your mental health and your physical health and try to figure out what you really want for sure.
Yeah.
And, there's, you know, I'm sure a lot of people you talk to, that's like, it's definitely a common thread with musicians. Like there's a lot of alcohol and drug abuse and, you know, it's good. Some people don't find their way out of it. Some people definitely do. And you kind of have to realize that, you know, you're not a young rocker anymore and you can't just party every night of the week. You have to move on for sure. Yeah. Figure out who you really are and kind of get away from the acquaintances and the bars and stuff. I found that pretty challenging, but when we did move, like things definitely turned around for sure. And feeling a lot more creative to be out of the city.
So like the universe supported your move basically too.
Yeah, for sure.
That's
yeah.
really cool, man. That's great. Everybody pays tuition in all of our careers. I was wondering if you might be kind enough to share one or two mistakes you made along your journey and what were the lessons that you learned from those mistakes?
I would definitely say, I don't know. I look back, it's kind of the same thing as like, you know, as partying too much in the city. I feel like that definitely, like I look back and I wouldn't necessarily change anything for sure. Cause I had amazing good time.
Great. That's cool.
But when you look back, you're like, oh, I did waste a lot of time when I could have been like, you know, I wasted a lot of time going to bars and just generally misbehaving when I could have actually been concentrating on doing something a little bit more stable and more productive with my life.
Sure.
For sure. And that you don't know, you don't understand that stuff when you're young. So you can't necessarily say to you, a young person, like, hey, quit what you're doing. You have to like,
right. It's like telling yourself, oh, I need to put money in an IRA when you're like 21. It's just not going to compute, man. It's
Exactly. Yeah. So I look back on those things as potential mistakes, but at the same time, they're not, they're just kind of like, they got me to the point where I am right now. So
yeah, I look at things like that the same way, man. You can't, there is no mistakes, because, you know, you might have saved your life by not, by doing those things, you know, by not making a left and making a right instead and going to the bar, you know, or whatever. You just don't know how things are going to work out.
Yeah. And I'm thankful today that my wife and I and our daughter, you know, living in a nice place and feeling good. Like,
that's cool, man. Yeah. That's what's important, man.
Yeah, for sure.
Flip side of that, any one or two things that you did, which at the time were out of your comfort zone, but turned into positive breakthroughs for you, hindsight 2020?
I don't know. In terms of music, maybe it's like a, probably sounds weird, but just singing in Quest for Fire. Like, I think when we first started Quest for Fire, singing for me, like, well, with Hacksaw, I kind of screamed my way through Hacksaw, but then I started my acoustic stuff and I was, you know, I could sing in a kind of an acoustic world and folky world. But then we started Quest for Fire and I was like, oh, I'll be the singer. I think I can sing. And then that was kind of challenging for sure. I was a little bit self-conscious at first, but then I was like, okay, I'm not going to, you know, I can't yell my way through this. It's not really that kind of music. So I just, that was a little bit uncomfortable at first. I feel like the first few shows we played, I was kind of just trying to scream my way through it because my voice is so quiet, but yeah, just kind of finding that, you know, and just sticking it out for sure. And it kind of turned into something nice. That's
interesting, man. Cause your voice is awesome.
Thanks.
Yeah. That's like that's part of the calming part of your music, man. Cause your voice is really, it's like very reliable and it fits really well. So it's interesting to hear that was a push for you. That's really cool that you did that, man.
Yeah.
That's great. Yeah, it's
challenging for sure.
Let's talk about gear for a few minutes. What is your go-to guitar right now, and what other two guitars would round out your top three?
Well, right now I'm playing a lot of acoustic guitar at home. We have, like, I play acoustic guitar for our daughter while she's dripping off to sleep. But I actually just bought like a Martin 000, which is like, I've had this kind of shitty Yamaha acoustic guitar since I was 16. And last year I was like, I'm going to spend, it's not an American one, it's a Mexican one, but still like beautifully. Cool. And holy shit, I'm glad that I finally just dropped like $900 on a Martin. It's a smaller body. I finger pick a lot. So it's like the perfect guitar for finger style kind of stuff.
Very cool.
That's like right now, like it sits in our living room and I play it like two or three times a day. And that's like my main guitar. But as for Comet Control, I have a Fender Music Master that's pretty beat up. I bought it in Portland years ago.
Like during your punk days?
No, I bought it like on a Quest for Fire tour.
Oh, cool.
And I kind of use that. That's my main guitar for Comet Control. It's like it's a 70s one, and it's just totally beat. It's like got a shim in the neck to hold it together. It's got like a humbucker jammed into it. It's kind of a piece of shit. Like, it's like, I bought it for like $400 and I feel like someone misses it because it has so much character and it's beat up so much. I feel like someone needed the money and had to get rid of it, but it's kind of a wonderful guitar. Like, it's perfect for Comet Control. It's got like super buzzy, super fuzzy without any kind of effects on it. And I love that.
It's just that one pickup.
It's got a single coil in it too, and a humbucker. Oh, okay. And it's totally rusted to shit. And I'm like, I don't want to change it because it actually sounds really good.
That's awesome. That is really cool. So you got a Fender Music Master, and is that, do you have that nearby?
Yeah.
Can I check it out? I'd love to see it if you don't mind.
Sure.
Thanks. Look at that. Yeah, man, that looks cool.
I don't know if you can see the shim, but someone totally put a shim in here to hold it all together.
That's so funny.
It's got cigarette burns all over it. Rusted bridge.
That's great, man. You don't usually see those with rosewood.
No.
Yeah, that's cool. I like dark woods in my front.
That's my favorite. I bought it, in Portland at...
That's cool, man.
At Old Town Music there. Awesome guitar shop in Portland.
And what would be number three? So you got your Martin, 00, Fender Music Master.
And I have a Music Man Saber that I really like. That's an awesome guitar.
The Ernie Ball?
Yeah.
What is the Saber? Pretty. What does that look like?
I have it right here.
Yeah, man. Let's
check it out. It looks like, I think it's like the first guitar that like Leo Fender made after he left Fender. Super loud, awesome guitar.
That's cool looking, man. That's their original. That design is still pretty similar today, isn't it?
It looks like a Strat, but it's like a little bit more.
A little off.
Yeah. But they're awesome. They sound like the pickups are super loud, the original pickups. And yeah, it's a cool guitar too. I've got a pretty ridiculous collection of guitars, but they're all, I usually like lean towards not too expensive. You know, like I always lean towards kind of like more cheap guitars and kind of junk shop guitars. Like I'm not searching for the, you know, an immaculate tone ever. Like I love things that sound fucked up and fuzzy and just kind of strange. This guitar is probably like the nicest electric guitar I have.
No, I don't think that's strange. I think that guys that grow up in the punk world, that's more the norm. You know, they're not looking for like, I need a Les Paul that's got to sound like it's got original PAFs. That's not what none of them are. They're all looking for that, exactly how you described it. You know, something a little off, a little odd, beat up. You know, that's pretty more common.
The amps, same with the amps that I have.
Yeah, what are you playing out of?
Right now, well, I just bought, the nicest amp I just bought is like an Orange OR50. I just bought it like before the pandemic hit. I was like, I'm super stoked to turn it up nice and loud. But I have like a small Vox amp that I record with at home. What is it? It's just like a kind of a practice amp. And then I just have a bunch of like, there's a great Canadian company that was made in like the 60s and 70s. I think 60s and 70s called Garnet.
Uh-huh.
They're like hand built in Winnipeg. And they have some really cool stuff. I have a session band that I love that amp I kind of used a lot in Quest for Fire and the early days of Common Control. It's kind of beat to shit now, but they're really cool. They have he made a Herzog too, which is an amazing like fuzz box. So if anyone out there is interested in kind of vintage Canadian stuff, Garnet is definitely the thing to look up.
And those, what do they sound like? Are they like distorted, fuzzy?
They're all tube amps, but they were kind of like cheaply made, but they still, you know, the session man that I have is like really, like I tend to not use like fuzz pedals. I love just kind of cranking the preamp and kind of getting a natural tone out of the tubes. And it's pretty strange sounding amp because the more it heats up, the fuzzier it gets, but it's like,
there's
like
awesome.
For sure.
What is that, like a 15 or an 18 or a 30 or something?
It's I'm not sure, but it's just like a 212. Just like it looks like a their version of a twin, a Fender twin.
Okay, very cool, man. I never heard that. Garnet.
Yeah,
very
check
cool.
it out.
Now you said you don't use effects a lot.
Well, I kind of have my standard effects pedals. I'm not really into boutique-y pedals too much. I buy pedals kind of consistently, but I kind of favor, I would say that my pedal setup is usually just like a phaser, a tremolo, an echo pedal, and maybe like an overdrive pedal.
You play with a wah too, though, don't you?
That's a lot of the stuff that that's actually Andrew from Quest. He's like he's definitely you know, like 95% of the leads and all those. So he's an amazing guitar player, and he's like, his setup is like kind of fuzz and wah and a lot of tape echo too, like especially when we're recording.
Man, I love tremolo as an effect. It's such a beautiful sound.
Yeah, for sure.
I really like it.
And I lean towards I just have a Boss tremolo pedal. I'm not like, I won't like spend like $500 on like a fancy boutique pedal.
Yeah.
I have a nice like $40 Boss.
Why not? Works. Do you have a favorite song that you wrote?
I'm not too sure. I would tend to think that like whatever I'm working on is kind of my favorite thing, like the most recent things. And this new acoustic record, there's definitely a lot of favorites on that. But as for recorded stuff, I don't know. Like there's a few Quest for Fire songs that I really love, that I love how they turned out, and they're super fun to play. Like I love the song Greatest Hits by God. That's one song that I wrote the music to, and it just turned into this kind of beast. It's just, at first it was just like a super simple repetitive acoustic song, but it turned into this like massive thing once we put it all together and recorded it. Our friend Sophie from Godspeed You Black Emperor played the violin on it. It just turned into this beast of a song that was super fun to play. Like we would all just kind of lock in on everyone playing the same chord. And it was just, it's kind of a magical song for sure. When I look back and listen to Quest, that's
what you want to listen to.
I sometimes revisit just like, oh, that's kind of worked out like just how I imagined it.
Great song. It's a first song on The Lights from Paradise. It's almost 8 minutes long. It's a great track, man.
It's a super funny opening track.
really cool. The covers are these. Who did the covers on these?
Well, actually, that's our good friend Andre Etier, and he was actually the lead singer and songwriter from The Deadly Snakes.
Oh, dude, these are really cool. Very like spacey, you know, I mean, just like different though. Very cool.
Yeah, his art is amazing. He's still a painter to this day, and his stuff is just completely magical, amazing, amazing stuff.
Well, like the first album, Quest for Fire, like the gal's vomiting, but it's but it looks like she's like vomiting some sort of a lake out of her, you know, like it's a whole new life form that's coming out of her or something like that.
Yeah, super strange.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would encourage everyone to check out Andre's art as well as his music. He's got some really beautiful
What's his website?
I'm not sure, but you could probably find him
Andre
Instagram too, like Andre Etier.
E-T-H-I-E-R. Andre Etier. E-T-H-I-E-R. Cool.
Yeah.
Thanks. Anybody influence your playing that people would be surprised to hear?
I'm not too sure. I'm like, I'm definitely like really into fingerstyle guitar players.
Like?
I love Bert Jansch. Like he's my go-to guy for like the last probably 10 years. I just love him so much. I've been listening to like a lot of Jack Rose lately. He's a pretty amazing guitar player. He was, pardon me. He passed away. I'm not sure how many years ago.
Are these bluegrass guys or just?
Jack Rose is just mainly like, he's kind of like he was like a modern John Fahey kind of character. And yeah, just amazing, amazing stuff.
I really like John Fahey.
He's got a record called Kensington Blues. That'll kind of blow your mind.
Jack Rose.
Yeah. Other than that, I've been kind of revisiting Peter Green a bit lately since his passing, and I love Peter Green so much. And yeah, I don't know. Neil Young is definitely like I can't not mention Neil Young because
as a Canadian
hero, and he's also he kind of embodies a lot of what I love too. About, you asked me before about kind of how I landed on kind of like psych rock, but
oh yeah.
But with him, it's like, you know, like he's got Crazy Horse, like totally like full volume, super fuzzy, and then also his acoustic work is amazing too, and everything just kind of comes together in a beautiful way with him. So he's definitely someone I've always, always loved.
Isn't it interesting though? It's just so interesting that you brought that up, because if he wrote different songs, he'd be playing, you know, psychedelic rock. Yeah. I mean, because he's got everything. It's the fuzz, the long jams, the I'm not in a hurry, repetitive lines.
And arguably he is like playing that, you know, like, he's Cortez the Killer or like Danger from Zuma. Like, it's probably my favorite Neil Young record, but amazing.
That song is so good. It's hard for anybody to not to cover it, and it's bad. Yeah, I've heard like Government Mules covered it a bunch of times, and it's just they're great musicians, but that's such a great song, man. You know?
Yeah, for sure.
Give me your top three Desert Island discs, Chad, in no particular order and just for now.
Oh my God. Like stuff that I've been listening to recently?
No, just a top three. Like if you had to pull your three favorite records.
Oh my God. That's definitely a tough one, but maybe like the first Led Zeppelin record, I would say Led Zeppelin 1.
That's crazy to have a first album like that, isn't it?
It's insane, man. That's like a super nostalgic record for me, because that's like probably the first Led Zeppelin cassette I ever bought was that record. So that has to be it for sure.
Yeah.
I don't know, maybe Jack Orion, like the Burt Jansch record. I love that record dearly. I don't know. I should have thought about this a little bit more for sure. Cause I'm just such a music head that it's hard to like really pin down three that I absolutely love.
Oh yeah. Super and, hard.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe I can just come up. Maybe I just take those two for sure.
I always think about, somebody once sent in an email that says, I love how you talk to people and they have no problem sharing with you like addiction, dysfunction, you know, highs, you know, really broke at times. But when you ask someone what their three favorite records are, they clam up, and it's the hardest question to answer.
It is really hard.
I know, man.
It's like, there's definitely like hundreds floating through my head right now. And it's and from someone that, you know, that grew up as a, you know, full music head since I was like a little kid, it's like they're definitely hard to pinpoint for sure.
Oh hell yeah. It's almost like a penalty if you can't take some. Tell me the best decision you ever made.
To move to the country.
Right.
And
on,
to, you know, marry my wife and have a daughter. Like those are all, and those things just happened recently in my life in the last few years.
Congratulations, man. That's
great. Thank you very much. I think it's best decision ever, best move ever.
I like to hear that. That's good, man.
Yeah.
Tough question. What do you like most about yourself?
It's probably a good and bad thing, but I like that I'm just pretty easygoing, pretty laid back. I'm not sure if my wife would tell you the same thing.
Well, that's part two of the question. What would your spouse or partner say they like most about you?
She might like that I'm easygoing, and then she might not like that I'm easygoing as well. Your detriment.
Sometimes blessing and a curse, one of those things.
Yeah, exactly.
I hear you, man.
Sometimes I'm a bit too mellow about things, I think.
Is she Canadian also?
Yeah.
Is that everybody in Canada seems pretty easy. I know it's like a stereotype thing. I joke about it with a lot of Canadian musicians, but you guys are pretty easy going, man. It's like,
you know, we're pretty happy up here, I guess.
Yeah.
Like I said, Nicole and I grew up in kind of the country. She grew up in cottage country up in the Muskokas. I don't know if you're familiar, but
no, where's that?
But we both grew up in kind of like more rural nature settings. So we're both like, we're definitely drawn to, the country life, the rural life. For sure.
People that I've met that grow up in those environments to begin with are much easier going, because I find it takes a lot. I think your gratitude about simple things is much more, your awareness of the beauty of simple things is really prevalent naturally.
Yeah.
And because of that, things don't stress you out, because I think your perspectives on what is important is just a little more. Yeah,
it changes drastically for sure. Like I was saying before about, you know, just moving out of the city was a great, great move. And just like moving to the country and having a vegetable garden and just kind of like there's the winters are pretty crazy up here in Ontario, but like as soon as we moved out of Toronto to a country setting, that like all of a sudden winters were like so beautiful. Everything was just like white and majestic. And so even the winters are amazing, as well as like the summers and the fall. Like it's just definitely a whole new perspective and just kind of makes you rethink, reevaluate.
How cold like is what it? You
want and your perspective and everything.
Yeah. How cold is it there? Like in the winter?
In winter, like it dips to like minus, you know, at its coldest, maybe minus 20.
Holy shit. That's cold.
But, you know, like it's not, I don't know, but like we're Northerners. So like I tend to really like, I would take like winter over like, you know, like 100-degree.
Over what we got down here in Florida. Trust me. I'm sure it's, you can't breathe.
And we definitely busy ourselves too. We still go, you get bundled up and you go for walks and, you know, you just enjoy yourself. You enjoy it. You enjoy the outdoors even in the winter up here for sure.
I think if you have a sense of community, probably makes it a lot easier too.
Yeah, for sure.
That's cool, man. Something or someone you miss from your childhood?
I don't know. I think I just miss like, just like the solitary life being a kid, you know, like just completely carefree.
Yeah.
And, you know, when nothing really mattered for sure.
No responsibility.
No responsibilities. Yeah,
I feel you on that. Most important thing your dad taught you or your stepdad?
Yeah, like I would say my stepfather, like basically growing up on a farm, you have to learn to pull your weight, right? Like I think like before my mom met my stepfather, it might have been just like a pretty quiet kid, but you know, my stepfather got me out the door in the mornings and put me to work.
That's pruning
trees and trimming the grass and just kind of contributing to, you know, so that, definitely hard work for sure.
Very cool, man. And how about your mom? Most important thing she taught you?
I think I got a lot of my music from my mom. My kind of, you know, she's kind of an old hippie, and she, you know, she was the musician. She's an amazing piano player. Her taste in music and just kind of her lust for life, for sure.
That's sweet, man. Cool. Any hobbies outside of music?
Yeah, like my wife and I are like kind of like avid like campers and just like nature lovers. So we like hiking. There's like about an hour, once you like get an hour past Toronto into the north, an hour, 2 hours, you get into some really beautiful, beautiful landscapes, beautiful nature. Cause it like, it's really just, if you can picture it, everyone in Canada lives along the border.
Yeah.
For the most part. And, yeah, like you're in pure wilderness in Ontario. If you drive like 3 or 4 hours north, you're like, you know, like towns start to disappear and you're just in the beautiful lake. So yeah, Nicole and I are definitely nature lovers, and I love canoeing too. And, just getting even further for
what,
sure.
What kind of animals do you see when you go on these hikes or in that area?
There's bear, actually. Interesting story. My wife and I there's a big provincial park in Ontario called Algonquin. And actually this place that we were staying at, I was like, oh, you can take this trail and you can find like a secret waterfall. And we actually saw like a wolf on the path.
Holy.
We're like, okay, maybe this hike is over, but it just kind of just slowly came through and just turned around and looked at us and disappeared into the forest. But yeah. Like there's moose, deer, like all sorts of wildlife for sure. Northern wildlife. Wow. Yeah.
When you go on these hikes, do you like, is it standard procedure, like bring a firearm or something in case a bear or a wolf attacks you or something? Or doesn't happen?
And like a wolf would never attack you anyway. It's just kind of like, it's kind of freaky to see though, but when you're not used to it, but we don't like, I maybe bring like a pocket knife with me, but usually when we're camping, we just have one anyway, but but we're not doing like epic hikes, like days on end. We're just kind of, if we go camping, we just kind of like, we do the hikes within the park.
Okay. So there's civilization around there. It's not like,
I'm not sure how many, like Algonquin is a massive provincial park. I'm not sure how many acres or hectares it is, but it's like, it's not like there's campers along the main highway. And then there's really nothing. Like there's canoers and just hikers. And you don't, if you go on a hike, you maybe won't see someone for a while.
Wow, man, that's I grew up in the city and I love animals just to be around them because it's something I never had, never saw, except the animals in the city, the people that were there. But it's a beautiful thing to see that, man.
Yeah,
that animals.
Yeah, like we're pretty blessed here in Ontario. It's just amazing, like right in the midst of the Great Lakes and beautiful nature.
That's cool, and it's great that you are like so aware of that, man. Like I said, I think it's really cool. Two more questions, man. Toughest decision you've had to make or most difficult thing you've had to do?
I don't know. I think it all just comes back to getting out of the city for me. Coming back to that, but tough decision, but like definitely a good decision for sure.
You think you'd ever move back or you're staying up there for good now?
Yeah, I don't think we'll ever move back to Toronto. We're definitely like, even if we wanted to, we're definitely priced out. It's just like insane here. Like the city, like I kind of commute back and forth to the city, and like if I'm building studios there or working on a residential job, but yeah, I can't really picture myself ever returning to a big city.
You drive there?
Yeah. It's about an hour.
Okay. Is there traffic to get in from I would assume a lot of people make that drive to have the benefit of living out in the country.
Yeah, for sure. There's like, like Toronto is, I think it's like 3 million people at this point. That doesn't include like this, like kind of sprawling suburbs in Ontario. So definitely there's a lot of traffic. That's kind of a challenging thing. But
man, do you know a guy, do you happen to know a guy named Rob Lamoth?
No.
He's a Canadian guy. I think he lives in the center of the country though, but he lives in the same thing, a really rural community. Musician. He lives in a really rural community. And same thing. He's there for the same reasons you are. He loves it. It's beautiful, you know, relaxing, no stress, all that kind of stuff. I didn't mean to sound ignorant there. So you're from Canada. Do you know? I just thought you might know him because you're a musician and it's a small community.
You know what? That's not a strange question at all, because it's highly possible. Because like, you know, when you start touring in Canada, like if you're not going into the States, you're touring Canada and there's like five or six big cities across until you hit Vancouver and you're meeting everybody. So that's true. We have like so many dear friends all spread out across Canada. It's like one big kind of scene for sure.
Do you know Ben Yardley from La Chinga?
No, I don't.
He's a psychedelic rocker and a good guy.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. He's another guy in the center of the state, and he's he has a business. He does, renovations, oddly enough.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. He's had a business for a long time. Cool. Last question, man. And thank you so much for your time. Biggest change in your personality over the last 10 years, and how much of that change has been deliberate and intentional, and how much is just a part of aging?
The biggest change is definitely like kind of, you know, definitely sobering up a bit for sure. And being we've definitely touched on this a bunch in the interview. And in the last 10 years, just kind of realizing what's most important for sure. And that's a huge change when you finally decide to figure out the important things and not just be a selfish person and go through life without even thinking about, you know, your loved ones or everything like that. So yeah, that's a huge change. And that all comes back to, you know, having a clear vision and moving out of the city, all those things. That's definitely a huge change for me. And it's like a whole new chapter for sure.
Well, man, I'm happy for you. It sounds like a lot of fun, and you sound like you got a really nice thing going with your wife too. So best of luck to the two of you guys and raising your daughter and any other kids you might have. And thank you very much for all the great music you've made over the years, man. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks, Craig.
Let me tell people where to find you online. I would love you to check out Chad's music. The bands are Comet Control, Quest for Fire, and Nordic Nomadic. If you are into any kind of psychedelic rock, I mean, this guy's got it together. All three of these bands are very different, but you hear his voice, you hear his vibe, and it's great stuff. Also, you could find Comet Control on Instagram and Quest for Fire on Instagram and Facebook. All three of these bands, Comet Control, Nordic Nomadic, and Quest for Fire, they all have accounts. They're not tremendously active, but they do post there from time to time. Anything else that you want to – and when someone's in Canada, they want to get a input or work with you to build a studio. Is there a website for that?
The company's called Harbor Acoustics.
H-A-R-B-O-R?
B-O-U-R.
Harbor Acoustics.
Yep.
Yeah, if you're in Canada and you're looking to build a studio, Harbor Acoustics, H-A-R-B-O-U-R, and ask for Chad. This is the guy you want building your studio. He's a freaking recording genius. So, all right, man, anything else?
No, I don't think so.
Right on, man. Well, thanks for everything. I really appreciate your music, and I hope to hear more of it over the years, man. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Craig. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Hang on 1 second. We'll wrap up. Everybody, thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this, please share it on your social media channels with your friends. Thanks very much to Chad Ross. Again, check out his music, Comet Control, Quest for Fire, and Nordic Nomadic. Great bands, all three of them. And most important, man, especially nowadays, remember that happiness is a choice, so choose wisely. Be nice. Go play your guitar and have fun. Till next time, peace and love, everybody. I am out. Chad, thank you so much, brother.
Thanks, Craig.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of Everyone Loves Guitar. If you did, make sure you go to everyonelovesguitar.com/subscribe and subscribe to the audio podcast and to our very active YouTube community. And if you have any comments, please write me at everyonelovesguitar.com/hello. We'll see you on the next episode. Until then, make sure you choose happiness, relax, and have as much fun as possible.
Have you heard about the 2018 study that showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? No? Well, now you have. I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual, the company making traceability the new standard in the supplement industry. I remember staring at my prenatal vitamins and finding all these things I was trying to avoid: high amounts of heavy metals, synthetic colorants, and unnecessary ingredients. So, at 4 months pregnant, I quit my job and started Ritual because I believe that all women deserve to know what they're putting in their bodies and why. I'm so proud of our prenatal vitamin. The ingredients are 100% traceable. It's third-party tested for microbes and heavy metals and recently received the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. You see, we trace like a mother because, let's be honest, no one cares quite like a mother. But don't just take my word for it. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/prenatal.